Blog Talk Radio.
Bud, would you call Margaret up and ask her to come on up? I want to ask her what her plans are for our Portland layover. You know, we've got a 20-hour layover, and I have something in mind, and she and her crew might want to do with us, okay?
Okay. You want to fill me in?
Well, I'll wait until she comes up and tell you and Steve at the same time.
Okay. Well, she's on her way up. Steve. I've been busy working on my bid sheet for next month, so where are we now?
We're about an hour out of Seattle, and it looks like an on-time arrival. That means we should be in time in Portland, too. I guess it has to do with the fact that Neil has a car in Portland, and he wants to take us all on an exciting trip somewhere, right, Neil?
Well, just be patient, Steve, and you'll find out. Yes, Margaret. I hope I'm not taking you away from any of your cabin service back there.
No, everyone's taken care of, and most of them are enjoying the scenery outside or napping. Would you like some coffee? We've also got some cheesecake left over if you guys would like to partake.
Margaret, I'll go back with you and get a slice for each of us after we hear what the captain has in mind. Neil, you've got our undivided attention now.
Well, as you know, guys, I have a Chevy station wagon that Captain Joe Gimmel and I bought from an agent out here in Portland, and I keep it parked at the Cosmopolitan Hotel where we usually have our layovers, where we'll be on our layover tonight. Here's what I'm thinking. If you guys want to go skiing tomorrow up on Mount Hood, we'll leave the hotel early and drive up, have lunch, ski, and then have dinner and back to the Cosmo so we can get some sleep before our trip the next morning. How does that sound, Margaret?
Count me in, Captain Neil. I had my first trip to Mount Hood on a trip a few years ago with Captain Bill Malone, and that's when I fell in love.
You fell in love with Malone? I thought I had a chance, Margaret.
No, Steve did both. I fell in love with the mountain, the lodge, the skiing, and especially sitting in front of that great big fireplace drinking hot rum and talking about Eastern. Tell me more about your plans, Captain.
Well, we'll be on time and should be at the hotel, I guess, looks like around 8 p.m. If you guys are not too tired, how about we meet down in the dugout lounge about 9 o'clock for a drink, and whoever in your crew wants to go with us, tell them to be there for our planning, okay?
Okay, there's me and three others in my crew. Also, there's a couple of pass riders I know who might want to go with us. How big is your car, Captain?
Well, I've got a station wagon, and we can probably take six in my car, but we have the use of Captain Bill's car if we have others wanting to go. I used to use Bill's Plymouth before I got my own wheels, and unless he's out here on vacation, it should be available.
Well, count me in. Hey, look what's coming into view, Mount Rainier. It should be a good view for those on the left side of the plane. They want me to tell the folks, Neil?
Yes, Steve, and also give them an update on our arrival into Seattle.
Well, I'm ready for some cheesecake, Margaret. Now that we've got our plans for tomorrow covered, let's go to the back.
Hello, folks. This is your co-pilot on the flight deck to give you our position and arrival time into Seattle. For those of you on the left side of the plane, in just a moment you'll have a great view of one of the Pacific Northwest great mountains, Mount Rainier. Now, I'll mention a few highlights of this majestic mountain. It's 54 miles southeast of Seattle. It has a summit elevation of 14,400 feet. Mount Rainier is considered one of the most dangerous volcanoes in the world, and it's on the decade volcano list. Because of its amount of glacier ice, Mount Rainier could potentially produce massive ice and mudslides that would threaten the whole Puyallup River Valley. Mount Rainier is the highest mountain in Washington and the Cascade Range. On clear days, it dominates the southeastern horizon for most of the Seattle-Tacoma area. And on days of exceptional visibility, it can also be seen from as far away as Portland, Oregon, and Victoria, British Columbia. Mount Rainier is the most heavily glaciated peak in the lower 48 states. The summit is topped by two volcanic craters, each more than 1,000 feet in diameter, with a large east crater overlapping the west crater. Geothermal heat from the volcano keeps the areas of both crater rims free of snow and ice and has formed the world's largest volcanic glacier cave network, all within the ice-filled craters, nearly 2 miles of passages. If any of you folks are going back east with us the day after tomorrow, and if the weather permits, we like to give our passengers a Mount Rainier off-airway tour, which air traffic control gives our eastern flights. We'll fly close to the mountain for a spectacular view from both sides of the aircraft. And about the weather in Seattle, it's a beautiful day, as you can see outside, with the winds favoring an Elliott Bay approach to runway 16. So you folks on the right will get a great view of downtown Seattle with Elliott Bay and Puget Sound in the distance, and on the left will be a good view of Lake Washington. The present temperature is a comfortable 52 degrees. Thanks for flying with Eastern to Seattle with us today. And our second officer, Bud, is going to tell you about the 727 you're flying on, which was built right here in Seattle.
Thanks, Steve. And yes, folks, this is one of the many great aircraft built by Boeing Aircraft in Seattle, Washington. We're proud to say that Eastern was the very first airline to introduce this aircraft to the traveling public with service on February 1st, 1964, flying from Philadelphia to Washington and then to Miami. It became one of the most popular aircraft ever built and is still in service today by many of the world's carriers. Eastern took delivery of the large version, which we are in today, the Boeing 727-200, built December 1, 1985. It's 20 feet longer than its baby brother, the 100 series, 153 feet long, and has a wingspan of 108 feet and is 34 feet high. With our larger engines, its takeoff gross weight is 209,500 pounds, with the power delivered by its three JT8D-17 Pratt & Whitney engines. It's certified to fly at 42,000 feet and has a max cruise speed of 0.90 Mach, which means it flies at 90% the speed of sound. This aircraft is configured to seat 190 passengers. We have a range of 2,400 miles. With all series of the Boeing 727 Whisper Jet, Eastern was owned more than 170 aircraft. Of course, it's got its name because of the minimum noise in the cabin, and along with that feature and the fact Eastern's finest in-flight representatives, our flight attendants, are serving you today. You may be assured that the greatest way to fly, Eastern Airlines, the wings of man. And thank you so much for being our guest today.
Steve and Bud, those were great in-flight announcements. You both got a round of applause from the passengers. Way to go.
You know where I got that information about Mount Rainier? From Bill Malone. I recall some of his great PA announcements. Of course, I don't sound like Bill, but I can sometimes give a pretty good imitation. Maybe you'll hear that later.
Good evening, folks. This is Neil Holland, your host, and along with Bud Hescock and Margaret Bars in Jacksonville right here with me, and Steve McDonald in Lake City, Florida. And I hope we would have Jim Hart was going to be with us this evening, but apparently he just could not come in. So we'd like to welcome you to our show tonight. And Margaret?
Good evening, EAL listeners.
Oh, yes. And hi, this is Bud. And I'm happy to be back with you this week.
Hello to everybody.
Well, we'd like to welcome you to our radio show. We've got an excellent trip planned for you tonight with the crew and this beautiful Eastern Boeing 727-200 Whisper Jet Flight 29. Now, you've heard a little bit about the airplane, and you've enjoyed a typical Eastern crew during flight, and you're about to share a layover where the crew members not only enjoy their layovers, but each other's company and the fabulous Eastern stories and wonderful camaraderie of the Eastern family. The weather is excellent this time of year and just right for a ski trip in the planning stage, of course. Let's join the crew and where they are relaxing now at the cozy dugout lounge at the Hotel Cosmopolitan. Well, I see everybody beat me down. Have you all ordered? Let's see. We are going DTC, aren't we? In case you guys don't understand my way of saying separate checks, it's DTC, which means Dutch treat, of course. Young lady, I'll have a Bud Light.
Captain Neil, I'd like you to meet a couple of friends who are pass riding out with us. You remember Luann Wiggins, my high school classmate from back in Hazard, Kentucky? Do you remember when we were on the L.A. layover and we met her and Captain Mick at the Irish pub? Hey, Captain Neil, how could you possibly forget me? Remember the song Pretty Woman? It always walks around with me. Hello, Captain, and I sure appreciate you letting me and my friend Luther tag along. We promise not to embarrass you on the slopes.
Yes, I do remember, and you're a flight attendant from Air Kentucky, I believe.
Why, yes, sir, you got that right, Air Kentucky. We're still in the air, and thank God we have pass privileges with Eastern, because we don't got any trips out here to the Northwest. By the way, I think you met my friend Luther Hicks. He got on with Air Kentucky after he finally learned how to fly. Only took him 10 years. He ain't as smart as that first officer of yours, Steve. Now, there's your smart feller. And everybody knows I do ever so much fancy a smart feller.
Now, Luann, now, come on. I hope I can learn how to ski, as flying didn't come as easy for me.
Good seeing you again, Luther. Just don't break any bones out there on the slopes. They have the beginner slopes, and that's where I suggest you start. Margaret can help you, as she's a very good ski instructor, having learned from Captain Bill Malone.
Well, we've heard so much about this famous Eastern Captain Bill Malone. Well, I feel like I know him already.
You'll probably get to hear more about him when Eastern shows up at the ski lodge, folks. Folks will be asking about Captain Malone. Everyone who's ever met him can share a story or two about Bill.
Boy, my favorite one was about...
Oh, no, bud. Let's talk about that tomorrow.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. Let's meet here in the lobby at about 5 a.m. for breakfast, and then we'll be off for Mount Hood. Don't forget, the time zone changed now. Let's sync our watches just like Bill Malone would do with his crew. It is now 9:45 p.m. right now. That reminds me of another great story about Bill Malone and his pocket watch timepiece, but I'll save that for tomorrow. See you guys in the morning. I'm going to get some sleep, as I can see a great day of skiing for all of us tomorrow. Good night, guys.
I'll see you later. Good night.
All right. The crew has arrived at the Timberline Lodge after a drive very near the Columbia River and the beautiful scenery along U.S. 26 through Sandy, Mount Hood Village, Rhododendron, Government Camp, and then up to Timberline Highway for the near 60-mile trip. They're relaxing at the hearth of one of America's most beautiful fireplaces in what is called the Great Room. I think we might have, Jim Hart with us on line 803?
Jim, is that you? Area code 803?
Jim?
Nope.
Apparently not. Hi, folks. Are you flying Eastern Flight 29 yesterday from... Were you flying Eastern 29 from flight from Atlanta yesterday?
Yes, and you were the pass rider coming out on vacation with your wife, weren't you? I bet you really like the accommodations here.
Yes, but first let me tell you about what a wonderful flight we had out here with you guys. The service was great, and congratulations on the travelogue on the way. It's great to be kept informed, especially when there is so much to see from 35,000 feet. Trudy and I are in one of their premier fireplace guest rooms with king beds. The room is uniquely decorated with original handcraft furniture, fabrics, and rugs, and we have the most fantastic view of Mount Jefferson you can imagine. You know, we come out as often as we can, as this is one of our favorite vacation spots. Do all of you guys know the history of this beautiful lodge? By the way, I'm Jim Hart, and my wife is Trudy. I used to be a manager over in Hartford, Connecticut, in reservations. Well, Jim, some of us do, and some of us don't, so maybe you can fill them in. Sure, Captain. Timberland Lodge is an integral part of American history. In keeping with the spirit of our pioneer forefathers, the area's native people, and the mountain's bounty of wild flora and fauna, the lodge and ski area were built with a rugged spirit of individualism, and yet as a product of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal policies, it was also born out of a spirit of cooperation and teamwork. Timberline Lodge was born during the throes of the Great Depression. It was a make-work project during a severely idle national economy. It was, and is still today, a symbol of hope and purpose, representing the notion that when government works closely with the people, it can truly serve the common good and provide solutions to some of society's biggest problems. Franklin Roosevelt dedicated this lodge in 1937 as a testament to the workers on the rolls of the Workers' Progress Administration. Nearly 75 years later, Timberline is that and much more. Timberline is where historic preservation, stewardship, recreation, and hospitality come together to provide an unforgettable experience. Not everyone thought it could be done. Build a ski lodge near the top of Oregon's tallest mountain at the brutal height of the Great Depression? But build it they did, entirely by hand, inside and out. From massive timbers and rock they found in the wilderness, they were unemployed craftspeople hired by the Federal Works Progress Administration. Timberline Lodge is a tribute to their skills and a monument to a government that responded to the needs of its people in a desperate time. Ground was broken on June 14, 1936, and work was done amazingly quick, rushed due to extreme weather conditions and the uncertainty of the WPA's future. Just 15 months had passed when Franklin Roosevelt dedicated the completed lodge on September 28, 1937.
Well, for goodness sakes, I think I saw that in a movie once, but I can't for the life of me remember which movie it was. As I recollect, though, there was lots of blood.
You remember the movie The Shining with Jack Nicholson? It was filmed here in 1980. It was based on a Stephen King novel. And there were some other movies here. Let's see. In The Shining, the hotel was called the Overlook Hotel. Then there was Jingle Bells in 1941. In 1952, Bend of the River was with Jimmy Stewart and Rock Hudson. That was shot here. And in 1960, All the Young Men with Alan Ladd was made here also. There are a few others also. With the scenery and snow during the winter, Timberline Lodge makes it the perfect location for anyone wanting this type setting for a movie. And some presidents and other famous people have also stayed here.
You mentioned last night Captain Bill Malone. He sure is well known by some of the workers around here. Whenever I told someone I was with the Eastern crew, they asked if it was Captain Bill Malone's crew.
Well, I see someone who can tell us a few stories about Captain Bill. Hey, Dennis, over here. Dennis, come on over and join us for a drink. We're about to talk about the near legend, at least out here, Captain Bill Malone. Hey, folks, this is Captain Dennis Ledbetter, or should I say General Ledbetter.
Well, Neil, you're right in both areas. I'm a captain with Eastern and a general in the U.S. Air Force. Hey, folks, how you doing? Yes, I can tell a few stories about Bill Malone. In fact, I've got so many in my head, I'm going to have to get just pick out the best. I flew for several years with Bill on the 727 when we first got the route to Seattle. And then later, I was the first officer with him on the 1011. But on the very first trip that Bill and I took to Seattle, I'd already flown the trip with other captains, and my ski equipment was in the hotel. And so when I got there, I said, "Bill, how'd you like to go skiing tomorrow?" He said, "Well, I've never skied in my life." I said, "Well, meet me downstairs at 9 o'clock. I have a car in the garage, and we're going to go out and teach you to ski." So I had just bought this car on a previous trip. I had to go to the tag office and get a tag for it. Make a short story long, we didn't get to the slopes till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and Bill had to get suited out with new clothes, and he did. He bought the finest boots, but I got him to rent skis. And so we get outside of the ski shop, put the skis on, and I said, "Bill, you got to practice standing there for a few minutes. Get used to it." They gave him 230s. If you know anything about skis, I was skiing on 215s in those days. But Bill was so tall, they thought he needed a 230. You talk about, that thing would reach a mile down the slopes in front of him. Anyway, he was standing around there and getting the feel of everything. And I said, "Okay, let's go over and get on the chairlift." So we make it to the chairlift, and he says, "No, I don't think so." I said, "Come on, Bill, you spent all this money. We're going skiing." He says, no, "I'm going to stand right here." And what he ended up doing was standing right there and posing. Now, you can see Bill Malone posing. And he would change positions, and these girls would come up and say, "Are you a ski instructor?" Of course, he couldn't even move. So I said, "Okay, Bill, I'm going to make a run." So I got on the lift and went up and came down. There he was, still posing in different positions for everybody. And they, you know, thought he was the greatest ski instructor they'd ever seen. And this went on. I made about four runs, and I said, "Come on, Bill, we're going to go skiing. I've got to teach you how to ski." And he says, "Do it next trip." So very quickly, the next trip, I got him on the lift, got him up, and I said, "Okay, this is the basic way I want you to go down the hill with me. Follow me, and it's called a snowplow. And you can stop, you can go as fast as you want, you can stop, you can do anything in a snowplow. And that's what we're going to practice, Bill." So I start down the hill in the snowplow, and he passes me like I was standing still. He had put those skis together. As tall as he was, the first bump, he fell. But he learned to ski because he's taught everybody else to ski, and a great skier. We went to Europe on a trip, he and I and the wives, and we were in Kitzbühel and took the gondola up to the top of the mountain, and we got up there, and it was solid ice. And I said, "Bill, I don't ski on ice. I'm sorry. I'm going to take the gondola down to the village, and you need to come with me." "Oh, no, I came over here to ski." About an hour and a half later, he struggles in to the lodge, and white as a ghost, and he says, "I see why you don't ski on ice." His watch, of course, was very famous, and we had flown, a couple of months together, and he says, "You go fly with me, you got to get a railroad pocket watch." He says, "I know where to get you one. It's an 1890. So we went over, and I bought the watch, and he says, "Now, I've got a lion's tooth on a leather key fob for you to put on that watch." So he gave me a lion's tooth because that's what he had on his. And so as long as I flew with Bill, I carried my watch. But it's in the drawer. In fact, I saw it just the other day. And the last story about Bill, we were on the 1011 on our way to Seattle. And it was my leg going into Omaha. And sometimes the 1011 was a difficult airplane to land, especially in a crosswind. And I arrived. I mean, it was strong. And the tower's calling, you know, Eastern such and such, and Bill didn't answer. And they called four times. And he finally answered, and he says, Oh, sorry, Tower says, boy, that was such a landing, I lost my headset. That made me feel great.
Well, Dennis, while we've got you here, we're not going to let you go. You know so much about Bill. You flew with him so many flights. Golly, you guys were kind of connected with the union as well, with the Airline Pilots Association. Am I right?
That's correct.
I think Bill was elected chairman.
Well, I was a brand new pilot on probation, and I got in trouble with Captain, our chief pilot back in the 60s.
Van Rollin.
And Van Rollin had left me a note in my box to see him first thing Monday morning. And this was on Friday when I got in from a trip. Now, you know a guy on probation, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, worried to death that, well, this is it. So I looked up the MEC chairman as Bill Malone. I called Bill, and I said, Bill, I've got an appointment with Captain Van Rollin tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and I'd like for you to go with me. So we went in to see Captain Rollin, and Bill is the most diplomatic person you'll ever deal with. And Van was just having a good time with me, and Bill wouldn't even say a word. And I finally stood up for myself, and Roland and I got that straightened out, and Bill and I walked out, and Bill says, I think you need to be the co-pilot representative. Why don't you run for co-pilot representative? And I said, well, okay, that's what you say. As long as you're going to rerun and be the chairman, I will be the co-chairman. So we served 2 years together, 67 to 69, and it was a great learning experience. Of course, I'm not going to tell you what Van Rollin had me on the carpet about, but I at least got through it.
Oh, yes. Steve.
I flew with Bill Malone also, and I've got a couple of stories that you guys probably have heard before but are new about. One of them was we were flying along, and Bill was working the radios, and he's instructed to change frequencies. So Bill changes over to the new frequency where the controller can just barely be heard. And Bill, as Dennis has already said, Bill in his unoffensive way states, if you just hold the microphone a little bit closer to your mouth, we could hear exactly what you're trying to say. And the controller came back and said, don't tell me how to talk on a microphone. And Bill said, that's much better. Bill looks over. I mean, he didn't know what I'm laughing about. I mean, it was classic. Another memory I have is we were on our way to Seattle, and we all know that Bill likes to talk in the PA system. And when Bill started this particular announcement, and if you flew with Bill, you've heard this announcement. I know the girls in the back started to groan because they'd heard it ad nauseum. But the passengers loved it. And the announcement went this way. Bill would bank the airplane over to the left, and then on the PA system he'd say, folks, if you look out the airplane to the left down there, you can see the joining together of the Bighorn and the Little Bighorn Rivers. Just imagine yourself back there on that fateful day in 1876. Early on the last morning, Colonel Custer stepped out of his tent, golden locks flowing in the breeze. He turned to his orderly and he said, gee, I wonder what the Indians are mad about. They all looked like they were having a good time at the dance last night. I guess I'll go back into my tent and put on my Arrow shirt. And by this time, the whole crew, who has heard this monologue every time they flew with Bill, was ready to barf. But the passengers loved it.
That's good. I've never flown with him, but I have heard that he has a pocket watch, and that's the used in case of the official time at Golden, Colorado went down.
Well, that's true. Whenever he started out on a trip, he'd tune in the official time hack coming from Golden, Colorado, and turn on the overhead speakers to check to be sure that their official time agreed with his timepiece. And it's really a hoot to fly with Bill. He likes to work the cabin on long trips, meet the guests on board, and as you said, keeping them entertained en route. In fact, nobody's mentioned this, but he had a book that he prepared for each trip, and he really put himself into it, and it was always very interesting.
Yeah.
I think now he feels, I do know how he feels about the passengers, because I got a little that way when I became captain. Bill and I've already told you we worked on the LEC in Atlanta, and I gave you the years, and he had no challenge that he couldn't handle. But as I say, he was so diplomatic, sometimes I had to use my not-so-diplomatic ways to get the thing done.
You know, there are so many things that I remember about Bill. the year I became the editor, of course, Bill asked me, called me, and said, Neil, he said, I'm about ready to kind of hang it up. I've been doing this Repartee magazine now for about 15 years, and I'm ready to pass it on. And he says, I thought of you, and I thought you would do a good job, and I've recommended you. And I said, my golly, Bill, you know, the Repartee, I've only read about two or three of them in my life since I've been a member. But at any rate, I did accept the editorship of the magazine, and I thought the ones that I put out were interesting and changed some of the things that Bill had done. But just doing the interview with Bill for the Hall of Fame Award that he was inducted into the retired Eastern Pilots Association's Hall of Fame, I had the occasion to be with Bill and Joy and Gib Guerin and Dot and so many other folks from Atlanta when we inducted Captain Eddie Rickenbacker into the Georgia Hall of Fame. And Warner Robins, where the Hall of Fame is located, Warner Robins, Georgia. And the night before, it was a black tie affair, of course, for the induction of that particular class of five people. I can't remember the other four, but Eddie Rickenbacker was the one that Bill Malone and Gib Guerin, Captain Gib Guerin, worked so hard to get him inducted into that Hall of Fame, because in most cases, Hall of Fames, of course, are kept reserved for those folks from Georgia or Florida or wherever the state. But they worked real hard in getting Captain Eddie Rickenbacker inducted into that hall. And the night before, I sat down with Bill Malone in our hotel room, which we had adjacent to Bill and Joy. And I did about a two-hour interview with Bill Malone. And I still have it on tape. And I put it in the magazine as much as I could share with the readers and without offending anyone. But I think that information in that particular Repartee, I think it was 1999 issue of that, or 90, yeah, I believe it was the 1999 issue of the magazine. Now, you can get these magazines. I'm going to put a little infomercial in here. You can get those because Jerry Frost, Captain Jerry Frost, and Captain Jim Holder have done an outstanding job of putting it on the CD. And so all of the magazines are available. But the interview that we had just in that magazine, I think, is outstanding. And I didn't tell my story about Bill Malone yet, but I'm going to do it right now. And this is a very true story, as Jim, or Dennis's is, and Steve also. All of our stories are true about Bill. He was a great guy. And think about Gib Guerin. I talked to Gib last night, and I told Gib about doing this, a tribute to Bill Malone. And he said that he can still now, every morning, he used to hear Bill call him early in the morning and said, top of the morning to you, Gib, top of the morning. But that's just the way Bill Malone was, a great guy, great captain, a great employee for Eastern Airlines. Well, I've got a little story here I just want to insert to what you guys have said. And, of course, we used to call Bill Matey Malone. We used to call, you know, the Matey Malone stories. But this particular story that I was involved with was a trip I had with Bill as a co-pilot on the 1011, and we went out to Portland, just as we have come out tonight. And Bill would always tell his first and second officers that when the meals were boarded, there was a special prepared meal just for the captain. It was, in most cases, the most sumptuous serving of whatever the caterer wished to delight the captain and had captain marked on the container. Well, after flying several trips with Bill and having my own car out there, I decided to go to Jake's Crab House and order the chef's delight to go. And I had it put in the hotel's refrigerator overnight. The next morning, I went to the airport earlier than the rest of the crew, and I had this particular meal put in the galley with the special instructions to the flight attendants to serve my meal after Bill had come aboard and had his, of course. On the outside of the container, I had specially written to First Officer Neil Holland from Joe the Caterer. Well, when my meal was brought up, I made it a point to make sure Bill saw the instructions written by Joe the Caterer and acted as if I knew nothing about this special treat I was about to consume. Bill was all attentive to my opening of the lid to this specially prepared crew meal for Neil Holland. Of course, it consisted of all the seafood Bill would order for himself, plus much more. I think I spent about $25 for that lunch. And I still remember Bill's comment. Do you suppose you could ask your friend Joe to fix me one exactly like that on our next trip out here? I never did tell Bill about what I had done, and I'm sure he asked operations if they knew Joe the caterer. But that's my story, and it's a true story. And I just had to do that. And
Luann, why don't you and Luther come with me, and we'll get you fitted for shoes or skis, snowboards, for our workout on the beginner slope. In fact, a few years ago, I was just like you until Captain Bill Malone took the time to teach me how to ski. Now, during your first lesson, I'll just teach you some basic exercises, rather, to help develop your sense of balance and get you accustomed to sliding. I'll help you focus on feeling the ski or the snowboard's edge, and once you've learned the edge control, you'll be able to stop or change directions whenever you want. Believe me, it's okay to be nervous. It's just a normal reaction to new or intimidating circumstances. And I'm going to do my best to create a fun, safe, and supportive learning environment for you. You'll learn at a comfortable pace, and please ask me any questions that you have. And, you know, it'll probably take you two or three lessons to reach a point where you can explore the mountain on your own. Just be patient, stay focused, and enjoy the snow. And as Bill Malone would tell you, I'm here to help you determine when you're ready to move on from the beginner hill to the summit. So ready, set. Oh, no, there goes Luann.
Pretty woman coming down the slopes. Pretty woman, she has no hope. Pretty woman.
Well, that's what we call Luann's music. Folks, we've enjoyed doing this skit for you tonight, and but while we're still here, we'd like to still talk a little bit about Bill. And golly, I've got stories I think I could probably tell. I've got one story that I want to tell about Joy Malone. What a wonderful lady she is. And I've seen her the last couple of conventions that we've had with REPA. And but I remember when I asked Bill during the interview I had with Bill for the Hall of Fame, I asked Bill, I said, how did you meet Joy? And he said, oh, he said, you know, he said, when I was in the Navy, I was, he took his training right here in Jacksonville, and some of his training here in Jacksonville, was stationed here for a little bit. And then he went to Atlanta when he got on with Eastern. And of course, when he was with Eastern, the story is that when he first saw Captain Eddie Rickenbacker, he said hello, and Captain Eddie said, oh, hello. How's your father? Or how's Mr. Woodruff? That's what it was, Mr. Woodruff. Of course, the president of Coca-Cola for years and years and years. But at any rate, Bill went on to say about the time that he went up to see his father that had an office in the Coke building, Coca-Cola building in Atlanta. And when he went up the elevator, the doors open, and he saw this beautiful lady sitting there at the reception desk. And he was just absolutely stricken right there. And I think he mentioned the fact that the doors closed on him, and he punched them open again, and there she still was. And so he went back to his father's office, and the secretary to his father, who was, I believe, Bill, best I can recall, his father was the comptroller of Coca-Cola, vice president and comptroller of the corporation.
You're correct.
Yeah. So at any rate, he mentioned the fact his father's secretary, who is that lady, that beautiful lady outside the reception area? And, of course, I think the secretary, I still remember her name was Miss Huffman. And Miss Huffman says, well, Bill, that's Joy Wicker. And he says, I sure would like to meet her. And Miss Huffman said, well, okay. She said, well, come on out here. And so they went back, and Miss Huffman introduced Bill, and he said he didn't know what to say, and the first thing that came out of his mouth was, what do you do for amazement?
Oh.
That's all he could think of. What do you do for amazement? And then Ms. Huffman went back, of course, and he said he dare not ask her for a date right then. But he did mention that he was an officer and that he had use of the and could go to the officers club there at NAS Jacksonville, or correction, Atlanta, where they had the Navy unit there. And I think it was out at Peachtree DeKalb Airport at that time in Atlanta.
He was a Corsair pilot out there at Peachtree DeKalb.
Yeah, okay. And then he said, well, maybe we can have one day a drink over at the officers club. And she didn't answer to that, but he did mention, he says, I knew that if I asked her for a date, she'd probably turn me down. But at any rate, as we know now, that Joy and Bill were happily married for many, many, many years, and she's a wonderful lady. Any other stories about Bill? Do we have any callers online? We have one from area code 678. Let's see if we can talk to area code 678. Eric? Caller 678?
Hey, Neil, Tim Nunn, how are you?
Hey, Tim, fine. Speaking of Atlanta, Georgia, how is everything in Atlanta, Georgia?
Well, it's about 100 degrees, so hopefully it's cooler there.
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, this is a great story about all these little stories. I love Lou Ann. Dear Lord, did y'all leave Lou Ann down at the bottom of the slope? It sounds like she's still down there to me.
I think she's wrapped in one of those things that holds the ski up. Looks like it's coming out of a ping pong machine.
I get no respect, Tim. Yeah. Or I'm sorry, Luann gets no respect.
That's good.
Tim Nunn is one of our sponsors, and Tim Nunn owns a mortgage company in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
And he owns a mortgage company in Atlanta, and it's South Atlantic Mortgage Lenders. And his number is right on our website, so you can go to the website and look up if you need a mortgage, reverse or forward mortgage. Right, Tim?
Yeah, things are getting better. It's 4.5. Fortunately, it looks like they've saved the country this week, so the rates didn't go up. And I'm doing a reverse mortgage right now for a lady. It looks like, you know, husband recently passed away, and it's kind of going to save her financially. You know, so this is good. It's a good feeling to do something where you help somebody.
That's great. And, Dennis, now, Dennis, if you come back on the line just a minute.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a question. You're living now in Savannah, Georgia, are you not?
Right. I live on Skidaway Island, which is about 18 miles south of Savannah.
Any other Eastern folks living close by?
Used to have a large group of them here, and pardon me, they all departed when the federal government took over our retirement plan, but there is one Eastern captain here. And why would you ask me? It just slipped my mind. Pete Rowland.
I don't know him. I don't think
he,
I know.
He was a DC-9 captain in Atlanta. He retired in 1985, quite early, because that was his plan. When he came to work, he was stationed in Washington. His whole career till the A-300 came along. And then he was a second officer on the A-300, and that got him to Atlanta. Yes, to Atlanta. And then he made captain on the 9. Goodness. He was a Navy Academy graduate, and like I say, he retired in 85, and he's younger than I am by quite a few years. And he lives about a mile from me here on the island.
Well, Dennis, did you fly after Eastern shut down? Did you fly with any other carrier? Or,
no.
I know I introduced you as being General Ledbetter. Of course, you were one of our generals that flew with Eastern also as a pilot.
Right.
You were in the military, actively involved in the military. I think you rose to the rank of general.
That's correct. And I retired from the Air Force after 35 years of service in 85, and then retired from Eastern in 90.
Mm-hmm. Well,
went on sick leave in 89, actually, and then retired in 90.
Yeah. We had not only you, there was a couple of other guys that we had that also rose to the rank of general with Eastern. I think Jerry Blois over in Puerto Rico.
Right.
And then we had Peterson, who was, did I say that right?
I think Vern Peterson was a Marine.
Yeah, he was a Marine, and he rose to the rank of general too, didn't he, Steve?
I think he was the Major General, Lieutenant General. We had several admirals. Charlie Combs was a Rear Admiral. Jay Miller was Rear Admiral. Jack Mumaw in Chicago was Rear Admiral. Those are the three Navy guys, and plus the general we were just talking about.
Peterson.
Blois or Peterson?
Yeah, he lived in Nashville.
No, Jerry was down in, I think it was Jerry Blois, wasn't it, Dennis?
Jose Blois.
Jerry
he was
down
Jose Blois, excuse me.
Jose Blois, yes.
He was the Major General of the Prang.
Puerto Rican Air National Guard.
That's what they were called, Prang. And he was Prang. The guy that had that, if you ever saw the P-47 sitting at San Juan Airport, that was Jose's airplane.
My golly.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that airplane. Yeah, I remember Jose.
He was a nice guy.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah. Let's see. There was someone else I'm trying to think of that I think, Dennis, I was talking to you about Paul Bishop. Paul's a good friend
right.
of mine. And Paul was in Desert Storm, I believe. He was active
right.
duty in Desert Storm. And I had the chance to meet him right before he went off to duty, and I think he was a commander of a air tanker squadron, wasn't he?
He had the KC-10 squadron over at Goldsboro, which I think is your hometown, isn't it?
Right, right.
And I had a real Paul and I were great friends. In fact, he was the best man at my wedding, and I was the best man in his wedding. And he wanted to fly fighters, and he was over in the Guard in Alabama, and he, not being a native, and he was never going to get promoted beyond major. And I said, come on, Pete, I've got another friend named Pete.
Paul,
I said, come on, I can get you a job that will get you promoted to lieutenant colonel immediately, and I was the one that was in charge of the buy of those KC-10s for the Air Force. Due to the 10-11 time that I had and the A-300 time, they tapped me to pick an airplane. And I really didn't want that airplane, but that's the only one that was certified for the job. But anyway, I got him in the unit over Goldsboro, and it was a colonel's position, and He got promoted to bird colonel, and then I moved him up to SAC headquarters, and that's how he got in the job over in Iraq, was because he was in the SAC headquarters. And they pulled him. They could only have one Air Force general over there. And they pulled him as a lieutenant, as a bird colonel, and some other colonels to work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working. He's vice president of operations for Coletta up in Detroit.
Paul Bishop is vice president of
for operations for Coletta. He's had that Coletta job
cargo.
For quite a few years.
Yeah. He moved up from chief pilot, I think.
Yep. When he passed the magic 60 years old, they made him vice president of operations. He could still ferry airplanes. In fact, he's a great two- and three-engine ferry guy. But it's just like everybody else, you know, 60, they didn't think you could fly anymore, so he couldn't be chief pilot. But they sure let him fly all ferry those airplanes all over the world with three engines.
Oh, my golly. Guys, we have a caller from area code 508, and I think it might be Jim Hart.
Yes, it is, Neil. I'm sorry I'm here. I got hung up. I was, would you believe, I was out clamming, and I forgot what time it was. Can you believe that?
No, I can't.
No, I can't believe it.
No. I believe it, Jim. I believe everything you say.
Why would anybody want to leave clams, huh?
Let me tell you, the clamming was so good, and a friend of mine came by, and he said, "Jim, would you like a couple of lobsters to go with those clams?" And I said, got it, man.
Jim, you're not making friends here, Jim.
Oh, that's terrible.
Tell me, I'm on neighbor five from my script. Where are we?
We're about through, Jim.
Oh my goodness!
We tell you, but we're still drooling from the lobster and the clams.
The only way you're going
what,
to get,
though, oh. I Jim, still want way... very much to have to emanate a program here on the island. The beautiful island of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. So you all tell me when you want to be here, and I'll arrange for free lodging for everyone who can get here. How about that?
All right. That sounds good
That's
to me.
Great.
You just are lucky to be the month that we can't get lobster.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a good save, Jim. Very well played.
Yeah.
I admire
let's
you.
Let's plan this. Let's pick out a date, and when we're off air, let's pick out a date and take him up on it.
Yeah, I think it's a great. I think what he should have done is negotiated the federal budget. It worked pretty good.
Let's take a vote. All in favor? Me.
Me.
Yeah.
Someone. I
Neil,
forgot who it was. Yeah.
Go ahead, Neil. I was going to ask you. Pardon me. You did mention that Bill's in my car was named the Mayflower, right?
Yeah, and I was about to ask you, I know, but I want to ask you, why was it called the Mayflower, Dennis?
Well, so as Bill says, so many Puritans came across in it.
I don't get it.
I got to use your pure when I was out there in Larry.
That's good.
One at a time. Steve, what did you say?
I say I got to use the Plymouth when you guys weren't out there. We borrowed the car and went out to Mount Hood and went skiing on the glacier and brought it back, put gas in it, and filled out the log book. And we appreciate it, and thank you, Dennis.
Yeah, that, I tell you, that was a great car. We paid $300 for that Plymouth.
Wow.
And
well,
Bill found it. I had a when I started flying Seattle, I had a brand new Buick convertible out there in the hotel's garage.
Well, you're a Cadillac dealer, aren't you?
Well, I had Buick, Pontiac, Cadillac, GMC truck, and the Buick Motor Division furnished me a car out there for 3 years because their regional headquarters is in Seattle, and I knew all the guys that had been calling on me for years were out in Seattle, and I'd just call them up and say, "Hey, how about giving me a company car for a year, and then I'd get another one the next year."
Well, Wow, what a good deal that was.
Well, my thing is that C.P. Henry and I were flying. You remember C.P.?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and C.P., his wife, for C.P.'s birthday, I guess it was birthday or when he checked out as L-1011 captain, which I was down there when he was checking out, and he had a heck of a time. But at any rate, she bought him a station wagon, kind of like what Joe Gimmel and I had. And I went out there one trip, and someone had stolen his car. Do you remember that, Dennis?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and he came up to me, called my room. I was flying co-pilot with him on the 1011. And he said, Neil, he says, someone stole my car. And I said, well, you left it here, didn't you? I mean, in the hotel, in the parking garage. And he says, yeah. He says, I know I didn't misplace it parking. He said, but someone stole it. And he said, I'm going to see if I can call the police station. And sure enough, just a little bit later, they found CP's car, and they called the hotel. I guess there was something in there about where it was kept. And CP called me and wanted to know if I'd take him down in my car to pick up his car. And someone had stolen it and had burnt the seats with cigarettes and things like that. Yeah, he was kind of heartbroken over that. But there were several of us out there that had cars, and it was kind of handy to have a car at the hotel so you could either on a trip use it or either on a couple of occasions I went out there on vacation and had a great time just traveling around the Pacific Northwest.
Well, when I started flying Los Angeles, I bought a car and kept it out there, and Cliff Flood used it quite often.
Yeah.
Now, would you commute from the East Coast out there, or did you live out in Seattle?
No, I was always based in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I just, had the cars. And in fact, we all were based in Atlanta. That's the trip we're operating from Atlanta to Seattle and Portland.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. I was wondering if
I was a brand new hire and had a car in Miami, and I had an apartment over on Royal Ponciana Boulevard because I was flying a Convair. First officer on the Convair, and I had a 4-day layover in Miami, and so I just kept an apartment there and kept a car.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah,
I did the same thing with a motorhome, though. That was fun.
Yeah, that would be. That was back in the days when they paid us $3.50 a night or something to stay in a motel.
Yeah.
And I had stayed at the Royal Ponciana when I went through training on the Convair, so I just continued my. Apartment lease there until I got off the Convair.
Yeah.
The Eastern guys were lucky. We United guys, we got nothing.
You didn't get
you wanted to commute, it's up to you to survive, sir.
You didn't get $350 a night like they gave us back in the 60s?
No. God, that's rich. We got nothing. Zero. It's your choice to live out of state or you can live at the airport.
Well, wait a minute. Now, I remember staying in New York, downtown Manhattan, at the Edison Hotel. Now, that was really a dump.
Yeah, that was the company used to pay us $8.25 for a hotel bill for overnight on the expense account. Yeah. And I remember the contract was negotiated about 1968, around in there, and the hotel money was raised to $9.25. And I had a layover that night at the Edison. And I got to the Edison and pulled in, and they'd raised their rate.
Well, the one before the Edison was the Paramount across the street from it. Do you remember that? Probably don't.
I remember the Paramount and the Edison.
Yeah, both
of
them.
I do remember when we negotiated that $8.25, they immediately went up. In fact, the hotel in Tampa did the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Well, Jim Hart, I think we're going to take you up on coming up to see you. If you could fit us all on the back porch of your beautiful home there at Martha's Vineyard.
That sounds good.
Now, you did. Is Trudy back from Florida, South Florida?
No, Trudy comes back on the 13th, and we're going to have a wonderful party for her. I don't know if I mentioned to you, we celebrated her 85th birthday while she was somewhere in the air on U.S. Airways between Martha's Vineyard and West Palm Beach.
Now, come on, Jim. She's not 85.
Yes, she is.
She looks much younger.
Hey, would you believe I'm 79? She married someone. What do they call that? She robbed the cradle with me.
Well, now, Jim, Dennis, Jim is our co-host, and she... Okay, Trudy and Jim Hart both live in South Florida in West Palm Beach, beautiful home down there. So in the wintertime, they're in South Florida, and just like, I guess you, are you considered a snowbird, Jim?
Yes, I think I am, because I still maintain, for tax purposes, our membership here in Massachusetts. My accountant tells me that while we're here, we got some specific tax breaks when we decide to sell the home here. So I'm trying to wait to see what President Obama and all of our dear, dear friends in the government will finally tell us.
Yeah. Well, I haven't tuned in, so I don't know what's happening in that area of what's going on and with the taxes and so forth. But we're right at the end of our program now, folks, and just wanted to come through with a couple of announcements. And I want to tell you about an exciting page we'll have on our website. And if you go to our website, you'll find that we will be putting up a travel center. And it's about to come online, and make sure you watch for it whenever you plan a trip, no matter where, whether it's for renting a car or planning an around-the-world trip. You'll find some great rates on our website, some good discount packages, and you'll be able to compare it with Travelocity, Orbitz, and Priceline, and some of these other online travel agencies, I guess they were called. And you'll find those, and I think you'll find that ours is just as competitive. And remember, every time you book through our online reservation center, you'll be helping your Eastern Radio show and website. So go to the website often and watch for this important membership benefit. And our website, again, is EALRadioshow.com. That's www.EALRadioshow.com. And if you look on that page, you'll find that we've got over 20 web pages now for you to explore. Got lots of them there for you to enjoy. And, Bud, what have you got?
Well, remember to try to attend as many luncheons around the country, Puerto Rico and Mexico. Get involved on the Good Eastern Family Fellowship. We will be remembered for a long time if we keep the Eastern legacy alive. Support EARA and REPA, the Silver Liners, and other organizations, websites, and show like this radio show.
Jim?
And speaking of the radio show, tell your friends about the show. Tell them to go to our website, www.EALRadioshow.com, and there on the home page is a connection to the show every Monday evening at 7 p.m. East Coast time. They can also register as a club member and take advantage of the many interesting web pages, like the travel pages Neil just mentioned, the historians page, the memorial page, the web page, Great Eastern video commercials, and Eastern people photo albums, and much, much more. And don't miss the website's newsletter of the most recent happenings. And did you know that we have listeners from Canada, the UK, the Russian Federation, Puerto Rico, Argentina, Portugal, Brazil, Hong Kong, Singapore, Haiti, Switzerland, Germany, Japan, and the Netherlands, Belgium, Kazakhstan, and the United Arab Emirates, Hungary, Israel, Guam, Australia, just to name a couple of extra ones.
I think we've mentioned the entire world there, Jim.
It's Eastern United Nations.
But believe it or not, folks, we are getting listeners from all of those that Jim has mentioned, and we're pretty proud of that, and coming to our website as well. So we do have some attention, and we want to keep this Eastern legacy alive. So, guys, thanks so much for being with us, Dennis, Steve, and Tim Nunn, still listening. Jim Hart's with us, and all of us, we really enjoyed this evening. And be sure to tune in again next Monday at 7 p.m. when Eastern's Lockheed L-188, which is the PropJet Electra, the Eastern Lockheed Electra Flight 30, will be taxiing from the gate. And that's our show for tonight. We hope you enjoyed it. So from the Eastern Radio Show and the Eastern family, where all the women are unequal, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average, we'll say to you all,
good night, Margaret, Bud, and Steve.
Good night, Jim, Bud, Neil, and Steve.
Good night, Jim, Margaret, Neil, and Steve.
Good night, Bud, Jim, Margaret, Steve, and Luann, wherever you are.
Good night, you all. Make sure you always fly right side up.
Good Dennis, night, everyone.
Good night, Eastern family.
Steve, thanks a lot. Good night.
Neil, I really enjoyed it. This is Dennis. I couldn't get the program on my computer. It was program 28, the only one that came up tonight, so I've just been on the phone with you.
Okay, very good. Hey, listen, Dennis, we hope that you can come back with us again, and we can talk some more. It's really been a delight talking with you.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and you've got a great show, and I really appreciate everything you're doing, Neil. That's tremendous.
Well, thanks, and pick up some of those archive episodes that we've got.
All right, I'm going to do that. And
good night.
Call me anytime.
Okay.
Thanks, Neil.
Good night, everyone, from Martha's Vineyard.
Good night, Jim.
Every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll bring your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes and I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the times I won't have to say. Kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I hate to go.